Hey, Jake, what an amazing show. We've got a professional athlete turned substitute teacher, goes into social media and real estate, and he builds an amazing empire of rentals.
Now NFTs? It's getting crazy. Gino, amazing show. What was your biggest takeaway?
Jake, I have a couple takeaways from the show. Number one, it's persistence. It's putting in the hard work, doing two videos a day for 2 years to get good. Let's be honest. How many of you out there have that dedication and the desire?
Practice.
And number two, just starting. Start with that first flip, because that first flip will get you to the 10th flip, will get you to the 200th flip. Get out there and make it happen.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Sanziano, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbo. Gino, how's it going?
Stanziano, I'm doing great, brother. How you doing?
Always making it happen, big man. Today's guest began his career as a realtor in 2010, but soon realized that wasn't the path he wanted to continue. Since then, he flipped and purchased hundreds of rental homes and opened other multi-million dollar businesses. He has amassed over a million followers on social media, where he teaches others how to build wealth and freedom. So without further ado, Ryan Pineda, welcome to the show.
What up, boys? Happy to be here.
Hey, it is our pleasure. Let's get to know each other a little bit. Tell us how you got started in real estate and investing and the growth since 2010.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, I got started as a realtor in 2010. Was never passionate about it. I was playing pro baseball at the time. You know, I got drafted by the Oakland A's that year as well. So being a realtor was just like a side hustle, essentially. After a few years of doing that, I realized I hated being a realtor, had no desire to do real estate, period. And I kind of quit after a couple of years. Fast forward, you know, I get released from the Oakland A's, trying to figure my life out.
What year was that?
2013 is when I got released, after 3 years with them. And I'm like figuring out my life. I start doing little side hustles of substitute teaching. Then I start flipping couches and all these ways of just making money. And I started doing pretty good with that, actually. And it was the first time I ever really had money, because when I was playing baseball, I was making $1,200 a month. When I was substitute teaching, I was making $100 a day. You know, my wife was in college to become a teacher, which would make no money. So, you know, we weren't ever like desiring to be rich or anything like that. We were just trying to get by while I pursued my dream of playing baseball. That was really the plan for the first like 4 or 5 years of our marriage. But long story short, in 2015, I came across a site called Bigger Pockets, and I learned about hard money loans. And I was like, wow, I could actually buy houses with hard money loans. I don't need like $200,000 cash. That's cool. So I ended up maxing out my credit cards, my wife and I's credit cards, and got enough for a down payment on a hard money loan and bought my true first flip in 2015. And that flip ended up making $25,000. And eventually, you know, I kept rolling that money into the next deal, into the next deal, and the next deal. And you know, my first year I flipped 5 homes, second year 20, the third year 50, and almost 150 the fourth year. And so that was the first time, you know, I started making real money and, you know, having like a career outside of baseball.
What was the worst job you had after baseball?
Well, the hard part was, so even though I got released by the Oakland A's in 2013, I ended up playing 5 more years professionally in independent baseball. So I've lived everywhere you could imagine. I've lived in Cali. I've lived in New Jersey, Texas, North Dakota, Vancouver, Canada, Winnipeg, Canada, you name it. I've pretty much lived everywhere in the country. And, you know, terrible conditions, living in crappy apartments, host families, crappy buses, you know, it taught me a lot about being frugal and just like dealing with circumstance. Mm. And, you know, we always had a saying that if you don't like it, play better. And it's true. Like, don't complain about your situation, play better. And you won't be in the situation. If you were good enough, you'd be in the big leagues making the big bucks. And so I really always have had that mindset of, I don't give a crap what the government does. I don't give a crap what YouTube does. I don't care if somebody changes their rules. All I can do is just play better at whatever game I'm playing. And so throughout the time of trying to find myself and figure out what to do outside of baseball, you know, I was substitute teaching. That sucked. You know, I was making $100 a day doing that. ironically, when I first got released by the Oakland A's, I don't tell this story very often, but it was the first time in my life that I didn't know what I was going to do. And for years, you know, I'm 5-year-old in T-ball. I'm the best player on my team every year along the way. You know, I'm a freshman on varsity playing shortstop, batting third for the team. You know, I get to college on full scholarship and I'm an All-American player of the year. Then I get drafted by the Oakland A's and, you know, everything's going according to plan. And then 3 years in, the A's basically are like, dude, you ain't good enough. And your career is essentially over. And I'm thinking as a 24-year-old, what do I do? You know, and it was at that point, you know, I'm not a guy who gets depressed or anything. I'm always optimistic and, you know, a problem solver. But I was like, man, this sucks. Like, I don't really know what I'm going
to
do.
This wasn't the way it was supposed to be. Damn it.
Yeah, I don't have a backup plan at all. Yeah. And I had already failed as a realtor. And so I hated real estate. And so I just kind of substitute teach to get by and make money. But I started applying for jobs. And it's funny now, one of the jobs I applied for was Allegiant Airlines. It was like some weird job doing something. And I was like, oh, this makes like $40,000 a year. That's pretty stable. That's a good job. And I didn't even get an interview. Like literally in my entire career of business, I don't think I've ever had an interview for a job other than like, I guess subbing, I had to have an interview, but it's not like, you know, that was a job where you better be here. It's like you pick and choose if you feel like subbing that day or not. It was kind of like being an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. I hated it. I don't think I ever had another job. Like that was being a baseball player and subbing were my jobs. And then, you know, I start flipping couches and that was my first successful endeavor in entrepreneurship. You know,
I thought you were kidding with that.
No, I'm serious. So
I gotcha.
The way that happened was my wife and I got married.
What were like the bed bug protocols to make sure you weren't like passing it on to the next guy?
There were none. We're just
letting it rip.
Letting it rip. Me looking at it and being like, this looks pretty tight. Yeah. Cool. Let's roll.
Yeah.
But yeah. So anyways, that came about because I furnished our whole apartment when we got married, for like $1,000. And I remember while I was substitute teaching, I was sitting there thinking, you know, I got such good deals on all that furniture. I bet I could go flip all of that for like $3,000 easily, right? Cause I was buying a couch for $100, a mattress and a bed set for $100. I'm like, that stuff's at least 300. And sure enough, I end up going buying a couch to test my theory. I sell it a few days later, make $200. And I'm like,
it's like Craigslist flipping or what?
Yeah. At that time there was no OfferUp. There was no Facebook marketplace. It was pretty much just Craigslist.
Yeah.
And the light bulb clicked off. I go, if I just buy one of these a day, all I gotta do is buy one good deal a day. I'll make $200 a day and I'll be chilling. And so that's what I did. I ended up buying a truck for $1,500. I bought a storage unit, started loading up on deals, relisting them on Craigslist, offering free delivery. And I did that every day. I'd pick up a couch a day. I'd deliver one a day. Eventually it became two a day. And, you know, I was making $8,000 a month by the time I'd kind of scaled it and figured things out.
All cash.
Cash money.
Ryan, my wife is a saint. She homeschools 6 kids. She's amazing. How the hell did you stay married? How the hell did your wife say to you, we're going to Jersey? We got to live in Jersey? Seriously, was it difficult on a relationship early on, not knowing what you wanted to do and just jumping around, not having that stability?
You know, what's great is my wife and I got married very young. You know, I met her when she was 18. I was 22. And we got engaged when she had just turned 20. You know, we got married when she turned 21, you know. And we were always broke. Like, we didn't have money. So it was never like a thing. And we both knew that my dream was to be a professional, or not, I was a professional, but a big league baseball player. And so she was willing to support whatever it took. And honestly, she enjoyed it probably more than me at the end. She loved traveling and going to the games every day and, you know, having friends with the other wives on the team. And she loved it. And I loved it too. That's why I kept playing, even though, you know, my real estate business later on down the road was starting to take off. I was like, yeah, I still want to play. I know I can do real estate the rest of my life, but once I'm done playing ball, I'm done. There's nothing else. And so I played until I was 28, I think. I'm 33 now. And that year that I was playing when I was 28, I flipped 50 houses that year. So I was still juggling both. And, you know, at that point, I was having my worst season because flipping 50 houses while trying to play pro sports is not the easiest thing.
You're getting pulled in two directions. It's hard to keep your
head. Yeah. So my head wasn't in the game anymore at that point because the business was exploding. And it was a good problem. So by the time I got released that year, I was at peace. I was like, I've done everything I can. I played as long as I could. Obviously, I've got a future in this new endeavor. I'm at peace now with how my career has ended.
We discussed before we started recording all the different businesses you're in. Can just tell the listeners why you like real estate. I mean, what is real estate? How does it separate itself from a lot of the other businesses that you own?
You know, for me, real estate was the one thing I looked at where I was like, man, I truly believe anyone can do this, myself included. You don't need a degree. You can get started with little to no money. The checks are really big depending on how good of a deal you get. And it's something that's going to always be around. You don't got to worry about it ever leaving. Food and shelter are always going to be around. You know, will YouTube always be around? Probably not. You know, is somebody going to overthrow Amazon one day? It's possible. You know,
I hope.
I'm not worried about tech disruptions in housing. People are always going to need housing. And so I just think it's an industry that is probably the safest industry in the entire world for what you want to do. And it's not like and I'll be honest with you guys, starting out, I was not passionate about real estate, as I mentioned. And, you know, to this day, am I passionate about like architecture and design and those things? Not really. I am passionate about teaching people how to build a real estate business. I think that's amazing. I'm more of a business person, I would say, at this point, whether it was flipping a couch, whether it was being in real estate, doing NFT, doing social media. I like playing the game of business, whatever that may be. And I think real estate is the easiest business for anyone to start. And it's the most secure and safe and big money. Anyone can become a millionaire. Like, seriously, not everyone can become a social media millionaire. Not everyone can become a tech millionaire, an e-com millionaire, whatever, NFT millionaire. But I believe everyone can become a millionaire in real estate.
At Jake and Gino, we say that we create multifamily entrepreneurs because we think our three-step framework is buy right, manage right, and finance right. So it's so conducive. There's not many investments out there that you can build a business through. We love managing our properties. When you first started out, what was your first multifamily deal look like, your first apartment deal look like? Was that the first one you held and started cash flowing? What did that look like?
I started buying, man, I don't think I bought a rental for my first 3 years. I'd say I probably flipped around 50 houses before I kept one as a rental because wow. I was so focused on building my cash up, you know, and I knew I needed so much cash to do the next flip and grow and all that. So I was always protective of my cash. And I always thought like make 20K right now, 30K right now on this flip or make $100 in cash flow. Give me the 30K. Because I know I can multiply that three times over each year with more and more flips. And so I think it was the right decision. I mean, it worked out pretty well for me. But around that time, I want to say one of my first rentals was actually an Airbnb. You know, it was kind of an Airbnb by accident. You know, we were being very successful. It was 2017. And my wife and I, or one of my investors actually wanted to buy a vacation home. And he was like, dude, I'm trying to think of where I should get a vacation home near Vegas. I'm looking at these different places. And I go, you should look at a place called Big Bear. Back when I was in college, I used to go there. And it's a really cool, small little town. I bet you it kills it as a vacation rental. And 5 years ago, Airbnb was not what it was today. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sure enough, I start looking at Big Bear, analyzing it. And I'm like, holy crap, dude, this is super undervalued because it's in California. California ain't cheap. You know, at the time, I was looking at houses for like 200 grand, well, cabins. And the same cabin in Lake Tahoe would have been like 600 grand. The same cabin in Vail would have been 600, like whatever. I'm like, this is a third of the price, but it still rents for very similar rates on Airbnb. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up buying my first cabin at 200 grand. It was a 900 square foot, two bedroom, one bath. And that cabin started making $4,000 a month off the bat on Airbnb. I was like, holy crap, this is crazy. And I ended up buying out the town there over the years, and I bought about 10 units. And then they started to target me as I got more famous. No, seriously, they hate me. So, you know, that was my first endeavor into rentals, like buying a vacation home that ended up turning into a rental because it was just booked so often. But then I also experimented with other types of rentals. You know, I started hearing people say, oh, buy these little $10,000-$15,000 homes and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay. So I literally bought five different homes in five states, the dumbest thing ever. I bought like a $7,000 home in Indiana. I bought a duplex in Buffalo. I bought
Rochester, Memphis,
something in Arkansas, something in, literally I went on Facebook and just looked at all these deals and I'm like, oh, that cash flow is 800 and I can buy it for 10,000.
You can't cool. lose That's like, money with 10.
You can't lose money.
Lose money with for 7 grand. You got to be able to make money on a $7,000 house. Come on. Bro, I don't care where it is.
Bro, the house I thought was the best deal ever. It was 2,400 square foot triplex in Pennsylvania. I bought it for $12,000. I was like, dude, I'm getting this for like $10 a square foot. This is insane. It was stupid. Or $5 a square foot. And it needed like 10 grand of work. And I'm thinking, dude, this is going to rent like crazy. It's going to get like $1,500 a month. And, you know, we start renting it and doing all this stuff. And you don't realize until you know why it's $12,000. Basically, none of them made money. And by the time I sold them all, none of them had appreciated or any. Like, I sold them for like what I was into them for years later. I'm like, okay. These are dumb. Never buying these again. The Airbnbs turned out well. And random houses in Vegas that I ended up keeping all turned out well. And, you know, during that time, I guess went to go back to the original question of multifamily. You know, I had bought the triplex and the duplex. The first larger multifamily I bought was in Vegas, a 10 unit, which I actually sold this year. Seller finance deal, bought it for 300 grand, 10 units. And with that deal, I ended up having no payments for 3 years. It was 15 grand basically down. And I just sold it this year for like 1.2. And I never made a payment on it for like 3 years. And then I sold it. You know, so that was good. But, you know, then I started a fund last year. And in the last year, we've bought around 530 units or so, something like that. Mm-hmm. So the fund has been really cool doing. And yeah, I think after all the years of investing now, I kind of have a opinion on what I believe is the best way to invest for me personally at this point, based on literally trying everything you can in investing. Airbnb, cheap homes, normal homes, 10 plexes, 300 units, you know, the ghetto, nice areas. I've bought anything you can imagine.
Yeah, but Ryan, that's the thing. Most people want to start with the 300 units. You've got the experience. You've gone through all of that. So your paradigm is completely shifted from where you started to where you are now. What would you say to the investor who's out there who wants to say, I want to start in multifamily? I think anybody can start in multifamily personally. What would you say to them? They want to start in real estate right now. What should they start doing right now? Because the market has changed a lot in the last 5 years. Let's be honest. So,
yeah. You know, at my coaching program, we teach people how to buy single family, you know, flip wholesale, keep it as rentals. Like that's mm-hmm. our focus. Mm-hmm. There are people who buy multifamily. I mean, obviously I buy multifamily, so I do talk about it, but it, you know, that's not the focus. This is my take. I've seen investors be very successful at all different things, man. I mean, to see you guys be super successful in multifamily, to see myself start as a flipper, you know, I had my friend Matt Onofrio on talking about triple net leases, and this guy's killing it, you know, just flipping those and keeping them. You know, my buddy AJ Osborne's killing it on storage. Him and I are converting a Kmart together here in Vegas into storage.
Always wonder what they'd use those for. That's great.
Kmart sucks, my friend. You know what I mean?
Self-storage.
Bed Bath & Beyond is next, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to kill it on that deal. But basically, I've seen a lot of different paths to success. And when I teach people, I try to be as objective as possible of like, okay, based on your situation, here's what I would do, right? So I think that there's no right way. It depends on your situation. For instance, if you're killing it in your W-2 or your business that has nothing to do with real estate, right? You're a high income earner. You're making over $250,000 a year. I would say you're probably best off, if you really love that career, focusing on building that career and that business and investing in funds and syndications. Like, let the experts like you or I do it. And I think you'll do better, because overall, the net positive would be you spend no time in real estate, you spend all your time growing your business, and you make a lot of money on both sides. Whereas if you stop doing your W-2, you lose focus, or you take away focus from your business to go hunt one deal that you're not really good at hunting, and you're going to have to go operate it. It's going to take time away. I don't think you should go full-time into real estate. I think you should just invest in a fund if you're already a high-income earner. Mm-hmm. Now, on the flip side, if you're completely broke, you got nothing but time, you're going to go hunt deals. Do I think it's easier to go get a big multifamily or a single family wholesale deal? I would say getting the single family wholesale deal is probably a lot easier. You know, if you're an experienced flipper who's already made good money and you understand like the game, I'd say, yeah, progressing to multifamily is a natural evolution of what's next. So I just think everybody's in a different boat of where they should begin. I don't know too many people personally that have been like completely broke and started with multifamily. And I'm sure there are people there. I just don't ever hear the stories. Gino or Jake. Jake did it.
Not well, completely broke, but had a not, you know, sub 50,000 net worth.
Well, when you're hitting up your grandma, you're pretty much broke, bro. It is awesome. So,
man. You know, grandma was good to me. Got me in my first car, you know, helped me get into multifamily. Got a shout out to granny, you know, right there. So,
Ryan, how do you balance running multiple businesses? You've got so many businesses going on right now, as far as NFTs, as far as the e-com. You said you're not doing it right now, but you're still there. You've got the real estate. You've got so many other businesses. How do you balance your time amongst all these different businesses?
Yeah, I mean, for me, every business is always going to have periods of like, you know, calm and peacefulness, and periods of ramping things up to the next level, periods of where everything is breaking and you got to fix it. So it's really balancing all those things. Thankfully for me, not everything breaks all at once. You know, for the most part, things are usually pretty calm and steady and going according to plan. And then there will be times where a business needs to ramp up for a big event or a big launch or something like that. Then there will be times where, you know, the business falls completely and now I got to go fix it because something happened. You know, the market changed in real estate, right? So house flipping's totally changing right now. Okay, let me go in there, figure out what we got to do, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with e-com. E-com is drastically changing. So, okay, we're not going to do any new stores or anything like that. We got to fix what we're got going on over here. You know, NFTs, I just launched my NFT. Like, that's been a huge launch in time and everything else that I've got to do for it. So I think with business, it ebbs and flows on, for me anyways, on where I'm spending my time. It just really depends what fire I'm putting out, what launch I'm doing, et cetera. But I think the only reason I'm able to kind of jump in and out is because we've got good teams, good systems, good processes, and good people. For most people, they can't run multiple businesses because they are the day-to-day operator. You know, if they're not there holding people accountable, running the things, the business will fail, right? Whereas I, first and foremost, look to hire operators who I can trust, who are going to be great and that can handle the 80% of the day to day, and then bring me the problems and things that have to happen, you know? So for instance, on like the multifamily side, you know, with Pineda Capital, you know, they're underwriting the deals, they're making the monthly reports, they're analyzing new deals, looking at other opportunities, finishing raises. They do all those things. I don't talk to people, like that's not my job, but they will tell me, hey, we're a couple million dollars short on this raise right now. We need you to go into promo mode heavily. And so that's when I know, all right, time to promote. Let's go. And so I'll start creating some content and things to drum up traffic for the project, whatever. Or there might be a big investor. They're like, hey, this guy wants to invest, you know, seven figures plus, like he wants to talk to you. And so I'll say, all right, great. I will talk and let's figure out what we can
or
do.
Or you're like, oh, great.
That either or, but
just
you know,
kidding. Just kidding.
Yeah. Either or, you know, I don't talk to too many investors. Like they know to protect my time, the investor relations team, but they'll be like, look, Ryan, you should talk to this guy. He's like on the fence. If you would push him.
You give him the nudge. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah,
for sure.
Before we go to the personal growth questions, you know, you're talking about social media. What platforms do you like to use right now? What is the needle, I guess, mover for you? I see you're really active on Instagram. I love your videos, your reels. I love your stuff on YouTube. What do you like? What platforms do you like right now?
It's funny, man. I got into social media heavily back in 2020. And I think at the time,
why?
Because I realized during COVID that people were going to be glued to their phones and trying to figure out what to do with their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they just literally couldn't work. So what do people do when they're bored? They watch social media. And so I was like, dude, if this is where everyone's going to be for the foreseeable future, I want to be in their face. And so it was very strategic. And look, I'm not a guy who consumes social media. I personally don't even know what my team puts out of me. I literally don't. And I just talk and they do a good job cutting it up and whatever happens, happens. Right. But in 2020, I was just like convinced that TikTok was going to be huge. I was convinced that YouTube was the best platform to be on. And I actually didn't like Instagram because growing on Instagram was really hard back then. There was no reels. There was nothing. It was like very hard to grow organically. It was a pay to play game where if you didn't pay for shout outs and followers, you weren't going to grow. So I didn't like Instagram. Well, I focused all my time and energy on TikTok and YouTube in 2020, where other investors kind of laughed at me behind my back because they're like, why is this guy making TikToks? Like, what a waste of time. Why is this guy trying to put out so many YouTube videos? Shouldn't he be trying to grow his business and all this
stuff?
I thought
it was like America's funniest home videos when I first saw TikTok. And it's still like, I'm like, what is this crap? Like, I couldn't believe people were consuming it. Like my wife's watching them saying, what are you doing? And I'm like, wait, you like America's funniest home videos. I get this now. So that, anyways.
Yeah. And I looked at it and TikTok for me, as I started scrolling through it and seeing what was going on, I go, this is actually like really addicting. This style of
That's
content.
It, yeah.
Yeah.
And the quick dopamine hits, the ability to just do, I was like, this is going to be big. So every day in 2020, I did two TikToks a day right there in my kitchen. I filmed them. I had no team, edited them on the app, posted two a day. So I basically filmed 700 on my own to learn how to be really good at that style of content and to learn what people wanted. That first year, I think I got 400,000 followers on TikTok. Wow. In the meantime, I was also doing YouTube. You know, I started with zero on both.
And this was all based around real estate content. You weren't singing like Cotton Eye Joe or something like that and doing like two-step dances.
Well, when I first started on TikTok, I did start dancing initially for just like, I'm like, I don't even know what to do. But eventually I realized, oh, people like actually will want to hear what I have to say about real estate. Okay, let's do this. So yeah, no Cotton Eye Joe, but other dances. Yeah.
I mean, whatever it takes, right?
Whatever it takes. If I have to go Cotton Eye Joe, then so be it. So I ended up doing YouTube as well because I was convinced that since Google kind of owns the world, being the number, like if people want to search house flipping or something, they're going to show my YouTube video if I have a good video about it. And so I started making YouTubes. I think by the end of year one, I want to say I had 75,000 subs, which was really hard to do. And from that point, I already saw all the benefits of my business in 2020. I saw my education explode. I saw our clients at TrueBooks explode. I just saw everything explode. And I go, this is where it's at. People don't get it yet, but they will. And then sure enough, every real estate investor started to understand why it was important after kind of setting.
Except these two jabronis. Gina, we're still not on the TikTok. The TikTok, baby. Come on, we got to get there,
TikTok. Man. TikTok.
Man, all right.
But you guys are on podcasts. You understand YouTube is important. You guys understand Instagram is important. And I'm sure you understand it like way more than you did 2 to 3 years ago, like how important it truly is.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, long story short, didn't care about Instagram, did TikTok and YouTube. Then Instagram released Reels, which allowed people to grow organically. And so I started to actually like Instagram better than TikTok, because the DMs on Instagram are better. You can get more sales. You can talk to people. The DMs on TikTok suck. And I would say at this point, Instagram is probably my favorite platform because of the ability to talk to people. Whereas on YouTube, that just doesn't happen. You post to YouTube.
And it's all Reels now. So it's kind of your bread and butter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it fits what I'm doing super well. I think YouTube is still great. My personal favorite thing to do is film podcasts. That's my favorite because it's unscripted. I don't have to do anything. I just show up and talk. Super easy.
I'm with that. Yeah.
I love that.
Guys, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Involved in multifamily, this is where you need to be.
The team you've built is incredible.
There is no egos here. Everyone is always looking to help the other person.
All right, we're back. We're gonna get you out of here. We got two questions for you. On the personal finance side of things, just interested to ask you, you're flipping couches. Anything that you do from like a personal finance hack or anything that you're doing successfully that you want to share with the folks?
Personal finance hack.
I was hearing the couches, man. And I thought, you know, this might be, he might have some gold up his sleeve here, but maybe not.
He don't have to hack anymore. He used to have to hack years ago when he was substitute teaching, but now there's not a little less hacking going on right now, you know?
Well, you know, if you go search YouTube for couch flipping, you'll see millions of videos that were inspired from it. Or views, I should say, on videos. So I think that is a great side. I think it's still the best side hustle like anyone can go do right now. In fact, one of my students makes like 20 grand a month flipping couches. It's stupid.
Have me a call. I get some shit out of here right now. So,
dude, that's how it is. I gave him like $2,000 worth of stuff at my house because I was like, I ain't got time to sell this. Like, take it, dude. I don't care. So I would say the biggest hack is this. Most content creators on YouTube and people that they follow that are looking for financial advice are savers, right? They subscribe to the Dave Ramsey's, my buddy Graham Stephan, and they're all about saving money. And I hate that. I've never budgeted in my life. I've never thought about, you know, hey, I gotta like limit my spending because I don't make enough money.
You're not a part of the FIRE movement.
I am anti-fire. So I am the whatever the opposite of fire is, water.
I think a smart person would say antithesis, but I'm not really sure what that means, right? So
there we go. Fire, the fire movement is Charizard. I am Blastoise. So I'm thinking the biggest hack is screw saving, screw worrying about budgets and all this stuff. Figure out how to make more money. That's it. Okay. What, even if your income is capped at your current position, that's fine, right? We as entrepreneurs know we can make as much as we want, right? It's just a matter of how innovative we're willing to be What kind of risk are we willing to take? Are we willing to adapt and pivot and do what needs to be done? But if you're a W-2 person and your job is what your job is, that's fine. But you can still raise your income. You can get a side hustle. You can look for another job. You know, there's many things you can do. So instead of just thinking that your income is capped at a certain level and that is what it is and you're going to have to budget to that level, screw that. Think about, what can I do to get to the income that I desire, to live the lifestyle I desire? And that's what I've always done.
Taxes going up, make more money. Recession, make more money. Your wife wants more shit, make more money. I'm with you, man. Gina, what you got?
That's it. That solves the problem of, well, money doesn't solve all your problems, but
it solves those problems, though.
It solves those problems for sure.
So two things real quick. Number one, I'm an advocate of saving, but only saving to buy an asset, because that asset should pay for the event. That's what I think everyone should be thinking about as an entrepreneur or as just an average person. You don't save for retirement. You save for a cash flowing asset that will help you pay or live that retirement. And I think what you guys are talking about, money, if you've got a problem and you've got money and money can solve the problem, then you don't have a problem. That's why I think entrepreneurs should really look at money and use it as a tool. So saving just to save for college, or for, that's not what we're talking about on this show. We're actually saving to buy assets that will pay for those events.
And what I'm saying too is not make more money and spend more money.
Yes.
I am saying,
unless you
if
want
you
to
go.
Yes.
Yeah. If you do. But if you want to save more money to go buy your asset, go make more money. Accelerate the saving process.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
100%.
Yes. Love that.
Ryan, what's the best way for folks to interact and get a hold of you?
I would say just go to ryanpineda.com. You could see a list of all my companies, all my social media channels, everything we got going on. And, there's a lot of ways to do business and interact, for sure.
And if you want to get into one of his deals, put up $1 million if you want to talk to him. If you're sub a million, he ain't talking to you. If it's over that, you know, maybe he'll take the call. All right. Gino, wrap us up.
There we go.
So real quick on the story of Ryan Pineda, a little 5-year-old playing T-ball, kicking ass, getting through high school, getting through college. He's always the best guy out there, right? He starts with the A's in 2010. And he's, I guess, Jake, that's his passion. I mean, he was built to be a baseball player, and it must have been a crushing, I guess, defeat when you realize that all of a sudden the dream is over and you're looking for something else, and you're a young person and you've got a young wife, you're married, and you've got to, I guess, take it the next, I guess, iteration of what your life looks like. And you're thinking about yourself, I got to start flipping couches. I got a substitute teacher. These pricks, that's what my life looks like. But then one
kids
day,
kids don't even want to play dodgeball. What the hell?
One day in 2015, he sees those magical words, bigger pockets. And he's like, if those jabronis, if that pharmaceutical rep and the pizza guy can do it, I can do it. So he starts buying real estate. He flips his first house. Then one goes, I think, to four. Then four goes to 20. Then to 50. And his last year of playing pro ball, he's flipping 50 homes. And he's like, you know what? I got it. I figured it out. And from there, 2017, you got 2020, he's figuring out social media and is growing his empire. And now he's got multiple businesses, multiple teams. And I love the story, because from somebody who didn't like real estate, didn't know anything about real estate, was in sports, is just an amazing example of what you can do if you just put your mind to it. It's patience, persistence, and willing to say no, but willing to continue to grow and to learn your trade. So hats off to you, my friend. Great job.
That was the best recap I've ever heard off the cuff.
That's what he does. That's what he does. That's what we bring him in for. So, Ryan, appreciate your time today. Gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.